I'd never heard this before until that day, and in 7, 8 years of training in hundreds of colts coming through, it's only this one that I saw come through. But you had talked about it, so let's talk about the almond eye.
So the well, okay, the almond eye. I guess what I would say is that to me, the eyes are a big deal. The eyes, the old saying, the eyes are the doorway into the soul.
Welcome to the Bill Oliver Horsemanship Podcast, your gateway to the wisdom, experience, and philosophy of Bill Oliver. Join us as we explore his deep understanding of horses, colt starting, and his unique approach to natural horsemanship. Today, we talk about the horse's eye, genetic predisposition, and working on your program.
Genetically predisposed.
Yeah, well, and you can't deny genetics.
No, but that's another one. That's a little bit different. So does that make sense to you on
yes.
that one?
Yep, that does. No, that story has always been something I want to talk about. We should totally talk about almond eye. Almond eye, that day and seeing that horse and that young girl just try and try and try and try. And if she'd had any other horse in the world.
Yeah. Oh, she'd try.
So let's talk about that. So let's talk about, we had a colt starting clinic and we had a young lady show up, and she was a beginner trainer, but she was willing to put in the work, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she showed up with a horse that was just tough, dirty tough, and he had an almond eye.
Mm-hmm.
So will you talk about, I'd never heard this before until that day. And, in 7, 8 years of training in hundreds of colts coming through, it's only this one that I saw come through, but you had talked about it. So let's talk about the almond eye.
So the, well, okay, the almond eye. I guess what I would say is that to me, the eyes are a big deal.
Yeah.
The eyes, the old saying, the eyes are the doorway into the soul. And back to the body language thing that you were talking about earlier today. And, we were talking about, it's actually the loudest language that's spoken is a silent one. It's the body language part. And so when you understand all those things and you look at the eye, like, for example, I'll be driving horses in a round pen. I can tell you if it's a scared eye. I can tell you if it's a resistant eye.
Yep.
I can tell you if it's an aggressive eye. Sometimes it's a neutral, kind of don't know, a bewilderment eye, could be a confused eye. Sometimes it's a blinking eye, and I'm blinking and thinking a whole bunch trying to sort it out. I just gave you about a half a dozen different types of eyes that just jump out at me.
Yeah.
Boom, boom, boom. The problem with a lot of it, the way I see it, is that horses and people, when people don't realize how to read the body language, when they don't really know how to read these things in a horse, they don't see any of these things. They just see a horse. Sure, they see there's two eyes. And, a lot of times I'll walk back to them and say, what do you see in that horse's eye? And they're like, they didn't even really look at
they
his
didn't
eye.
Look,
yeah. So when you get into things with eyes and things like that, there's an old saying that you kind of want to steer clear of horses that have an almond eye. You really want to find those horses with those big, soft, dark eyes.
Yeah.
I don't care for horses' eyes that have any white around them. I don't care for an almond-shaped eye. Those are just things that I have found that typically it's not a great thing that I'm looking for. With that said, you have to be very careful though about using these things as a crutch.
Right.
For example, I've worked with a lot of Appaloosa horses that have white around their eyes. I just said I'm not a lover of that type of eye. But I have worked with some Appaloosa horses that have been just fine. They've been pretty nice horses, actually. And so you just have to be, it's almost like saying, well, he's, and I've said this before, well, he's a Hancock bred, so he's going to be hard, stiff, resistant, want a buck. Okay, yeah. Well, that's just not true of all of them.
Right.
And you could actually take this and segue from there even a little deeper into the weeds here and talk about genetically predisposed. I think it's one of the things that a lot of people just totally miss. they just totally miss it because they see a horse is a horse is a horse. He's got a tail, four legs. It's, you know, and the horse maybe is really high strung and wound pretty tight and got a fast metabolism and he's thin-hided and he's really hot-blooded. And you say, well, what part of being half Arabian and half thoroughbred did you not quite see coming here?
Yeah. Okay.
Or you're working with something like in one of the ones, it's like we do a lot of draft crosses up here in Wyoming and Montana and colt clinics and things like that. And sometimes they're a bit resistant, don't want to hustle, don't want to move their feet. Well, again, you kind of would say, well, what part of over 100 years to pull a plow do you not see? Did you not see coming here? Now, they're a little thicker-hided, a little colder-blooded, and a little slower metabolism, and just the reverse of what I described a minute ago.
Yeah.
So, for example, they fit an outfitter's program really good. We're going to pound them in the mountains, and they can make it on less feed, and they're quiet and calm and things like that. So I think the genetically predisposed part is huge. You know, it's we would not take a border collie and put her in the boat and go out on the river and expect her to want to jump out and swim out there and get a duck or a goose. No, we're going to go get a Chesapeake Bay or a lab or something like that. We need to take the border collie and go where cattle or sheep or something. You know, so my point that I'm trying to make here is that genetically predisposed is kind of a big deal. Mm-hmm. I don't think it should be used as a crutch or an excuse when you're training horses, but can you look at it and not talk in the terms of absolutes, of course, but talk in terms of generally speaking.
Yeah.
If we have these kind, they're going to be this way or that way.
Yeah. Well, I think that's important when you're, especially when you're talking about horse training and selection for your program and use, and what do you want? Mm-hmm. What is your end goal? And we get a lot of people, we talk about program, right? Mm-hmm. We talk about mismatched all over the board, whether it's how much time. I might have four horses that fit what I want to do, but do I have time for four horses?
Right.
And then, like what you just said, I want to go run barrels, but I have a Appaloosa draft perch and cross. I mean, you really just kind of, the program talk. I mean.
Right. It's, we're not going to take the Shetland pony and try to run the Derby.
Right.
I mean, we could go give it a whirl, but we're probably
not. Make a good movie.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think everybody's getting the point here on the genetic predisposed part. The program part, I think, you know, this comes up pretty much at about every one of our clinics. And oftentimes it comes up because you just look and read the horses, you look and read the people, and you just see it screaming at you that this is not a great match. Right. Actually, we might be on the path of total destruction here for the horse and the person both. It's just bad. So, you know, it's hard sometimes for people to hear that, but the truth is that if you've never actually really sat down and thought about your program, you probably don't have one. I mean,
guilty.
So you need to sit down and think a little about a program. And I say this sometimes to people, and they just kind of stare at you like, my program? Yeah. Yeah, what's your program? I mean,
buy horses because they're pretty.
Yeah, well, I have horses and I feed them.
I just want a buckskin.
And what are you looking at? Here we go, back to the relationship being a beautiful thing. Well, if you have never thought about what it is you're going to do with this horse and what you want to do together, and maybe it's a job or a task at hand. Okay, so you need to start thinking about that. Mm-hmm. If you're a cowboy on a ranch, you're looking for a particular kind of horse that's probably durable and solid and maybe a little bigger foot and bone on him, and he'll look at a cow and handle and sort cattle or run to the hip to rope something, whatever. So you're looking for a particular kind of horse. The cowboy or the cowgirl is, you know.
Right.
If you're somebody who trail riding is your thing, well, maybe a quarter horse and a cow pony isn't even really what you're looking for. You might be looking for a horse This is a smooth ride down the trail.
Yep.
Quiet. You could care less whether he'll sit down and spin a hole in the ground or slide and stop. No, you just want it. Will he go left? Yeah. Will he go right? Will he stop and back up? And will he ride down the trail nice and quiet so I can take a picture and hear the birds sing? Yeah. Okay, so if that's your program. So in the end of all this, when you really do the assessment on the program, nobody's really right or wrong here. The only person that's really wrong is the person that's never actually sat down and thought about it.
Right.
We just have horses.
Yep.
I get caught up in those kinds of messes all the time with clinic settings.
Yeah.
And there's no program. They haven't thought anything really through. And you walk out there and say, okay, you have 8 studs. What? Where are we going here with all this? Are these going to be saddle horses? Are we going to is this going to be a stallion station where people bring a bunch of mares? Okay, I might get it. And they say, oh no, I want these to be my kids' horses. Well,
not even close.
We got a problem. Yeah, we. So the program is huge, and I see that across the country a lot, where people have just never stopped and actually sat down and thought about it. And I promise you, if you do, and you start to kind of carve out some parameters, at least in your mind, better yet, write them down, and then kind of determine what your program is and where you're going. Uh-huh. You could make the analogy, it's like finances, you know. My wife works in that realm a lot, helping people with finances and investing for retirement and things like that. And I've often heard her say a lot of times with people, you know, and they're getting older, you know, they're getting close, it's time to retire. And they said, and there was no plan. There's no plan. You know, we're 60 years old, and we should have been thinking about, we should have had a program,
right,
and been thinking about it back when we were 30, 40 years old, you know, and at least started investing in a Roth IRA or something, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think everybody gets my point, is that the program part is huge.
Yep.
And then the type of horses, the type of tack and equipment, everything that you have, all starts to come together based on that.
Yeah, that's really, I mean, if anything, for me personally, that I have changed, not just in my horsemanship, but like I'm really picky about the types of horses. I have limited time, right? Mm-hmm. As a mom of 4 and another job and doing what I do in my spare time, I'm really picky as to which ones I spend my time on. Mm-hmm. And we talk about high grading the pen,
right?
So I was the Mother Teresa, you know, I was the, oh, it's okay. And then now I'm more like, I want to ride Cadillacs. I am really super picky. And now that I understand horse psychology from you, and I understand, I literally could pick, I could pick some really nice colts just by walking in and seeing them interact with their moms or with other horses and humans. Mm-hmm. Man, it changes everything.
Yeah.
Bill, I ride Cadillacs now.
Well, yeah. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now you have a program.
Thank you for tuning in to the Bill Oliver Horsemanship Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. Learn more at BillOliverHorsemanship.com.